Welcome back to the Exceptional Conservative Show on AC Nation Radio Network 2, finally a station large enough for the Rotund Voice of Liberty, known as the Exceptional One. I'm Ken McClinton, live from the nation's capital tonight. A little somber spirit as we are considering the fact that there have been so many fallen heroes that have gone off before us to protect us and to serve this particular nation. Well, the great thing about it is that we are still a republic, still a great nation, and our nation is run on a huge economy, the largest economy in all of the world, probably second only for a short time period until China surpasses us. But tonight we have with us Mark Thornton. And Mark Thornton, some of you all are already saying, Ken, we know who he is. Okay, Mark Thornton is senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute, he serves as the book review editor of the Quarterly Journal of Austrian Economics. He also served as the editor of Austrian Economics Newsletter and as a member of the editorial board of the Journal of Libertarian Studies. You might know him far better as one of the ones who blew the whistle on the housing bubble and basically said that we were screwing up and that we would fall off the cliff. Good evening, sir. It's a great honor and privilege to have you with us this evening.
Good evening, guys. It's great to be on the show. I didn't realize you guys have been listening and watching our website at Mises.org all the way back to 2004. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, most certainly. It's one of the things I actually draw as a harbinger study on a weekly basis. Listen, how does it feel when you can go around to all the evening cocktail parties and say, I told you so about the housing bubble?
Oh, well, it's a lot of pleasure, but actually, you know, the greatest pleasure that I've ever gotten was in 2008 and 2009. I got three letters and a couple of emails from young couples who read that article in 2004, and a couple of them actually contacted me and said, you know, should we or shouldn't we, you know, buy this house and so on and so forth. And they wrote me back and said, you know, thank God we'd seen that article in June of 2006 and 2004, excuse me, and we didn't buy a house. We rented a place and we saved up our money and we went out, you know, in 2009 or 10 and bought a place at a much, much reduced house. So that was, I mean, the small things in life are really what matters. And I'd never gotten anything more that mattered to my heart than to hear those, you know, those messages from those young couples with young children whose lives otherwise could have been, you know, completely thrown asunder.
Exactly. Exactly. And actually, reading your work helped me as a counselor on in my own industry, a housing counselor. And I was trying to tell people, maybe it just ought to just hang back a little bit, because at that time period, during the 2005-2006, state governments were giving away whopping sums of money through federal support and also their state governments to help people move into their homes, because it was the thing that would assure them of tax dollars down the road. And it got to a point where it didn't matter the credibility of the individual, just get them in a home. Did you find that a bit surreal at that time period, that governments were willing to take such great risks knowing, well, maybe not believing your work?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because the way I was thinking is that, you know, it was true for my parents that owning your own home and owning real estate was the American dream. But, you know, as I looked around at my students at Auburn University and at our educational programs at the Mises Institute, these are kids who are going to have to jump from job to job, from city to city, from country to country. And the last thing they need to be worried about is owning a home. So, you know, for the basic standard traditional family, yeah, it's fine. Own a home, you know, in your hometown and so forth. But, you know, the new reality is we have to move around in this world global economy. and we have to be ready to move, and we have to be able to move. And the last thing you need to be is underwater on a huge mortgage on a home that can't be sold. And yeah, you know, so that was my great worry.
You know, as I, and when we look back at that intervention by the federal government, and it just wasn't just Democrats, it was the Republican as well, leaders who were pushing for greater intervention in the personal lives of individuals to promote what the impending desire for long-term tax revenue, this support and subsidy. And then coming forward in 2009, back on the back end of the fallout of what caused a recession, the banks falling apart at the seams with a panic, all of a sudden the government votes itself the power and authority to take over student loans. Was that wise?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely not. I mean, the government now is running the mortgage market. The government now is running the student loan market. The government is running all of these important financial marketplaces, you know, and if somebody abroad looking at it, they'd say, well, we're a communist country. We're allocating credit. We're allocating credit on the basis of, you know, government decision making. And it's absolutely ludicrous. And the idea that, you know, somehow if we put these markets within a government bureaucratic sector that somehow things are going to get better is just crazy. And, you know, what the Austrian economists, the Austrian school economists, which I come from, we were warning about, you know, government mortgage markets back in the 1970s when Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were first got started. We said, you know, if the government's going to back them up, that's a moral hazard. They're going to make more loans to people eventually who are not qualified for those loans, and then we're going to overflow the markets for student loans with guaranteed government money. And, you know, it took a long time for that prediction to come out. You know, I admit that, but eventually it has. And now, you know, now the student loan market, we have the highest default in over, you know, people who have not been paying on their student loans, despite the fact that it doesn't go away on your credit score.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away in terms of bankruptcy court than ever before. And it's only going to get worse from here because the labor market is is basically out of sync with reality. And, you know, college students are taking jobs at minimum wage and things of that nature. That they're not taking jobs. They're not able to get jobs that can actually afford to pay these loans back. And so that situation, which is the worst in our history, is actually going to get worse.
So we've created a generation that will become subservient to government. No, nevertheless, it doesn't matter. They're virtually going to be locked into an economy that serves government, paying it back long-term versus the liberty and freedoms that come short-term with being able to choose a more appropriate college, but not necessarily the name brand college.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, and there's a big psychological whiplash going on right now because the same kids who grew up as teenagers and college students and who were able to get jobs whenever they wanted, you know, if they were scheduled to work on a Friday night and their friends wanted to go to the beach, oh, well, yeah, I'll just go to the beach and then when I get back on Monday, I'll find a job someplace else. That's what the reality was in 2005 and 2006. And now these kids who are graduating, they've got this huge debt, and they're not getting the jobs that they expected, and so it's a huge whiplash, and it's going to be a psychological problem, scar, going on, you know, through American history for decades to come. I mean, this is not going to go away. Hopefully the economy is going to recover at some point, although what they're doing is not conducive to recovery, but you know, we can always be hopeful and optimistic that we're going to eventually recover, because good things are definitely going on in America and around the world, but, you know, government is not helping the process, and these people are going to be scarred for a long time to come.
Wow. Tonight we're having the great honor and pleasure of speaking with Mark Thornton, who is a senior fellow at Ludwig von Mises Institute down in Alabama. Someday we'll get the story of how Ludwig von Mises gets down to Alabama. Not in New York or Washington.
That's a great story.
Would you tell us how that happened?
Well, how did I get here? I was an undergraduate student at St. Bonaventure University in Western New York, and the economy of the early 1980s was in a depression, and I wanted to find out why it was. And I came across Austrian economics, and Auburn University at the time was one of the few places that offered any kind of education in Austrian economics. So I went to graduate school, and I came to Auburn University, you know, and all my friends in Western New York State said, you know, of course, there's Auburn, New York. And I said, I'm going to go to Auburn University. And they said, well, we didn't even know there was a university in Auburn. But, of course, it wasn't New York. It was down here in Alabama. When I told them that, they thought I was even more crazy, right? Mm-hmm. And so I get down here, and the next year, Lou Rockwell, he had founded the Mises Institute, and he brought it to Auburn because we were basically coming here for the same reason, is that it was a conservative university, and there was a little bit of Austrian economics here, so we came here. We both came here, and, we've been here for 30 years, and we started with, you know, not much more than an electric typewriter, and we've grown to become a worldwide influence, basically, and there are now 20 different Mises institutes in various countries around the world, including, you know, Japan and Brazil and Poland and Germany and Czechoslovakia, so it's a worldwide movement now. I mean, at the time, Austrian economics was, a small book club, basically, and now it's become a worldwide movement to enhance, you know, freedom and property rights and the values of the founders of America, you know, where people came to the American colonies to be free from government, from war, from taxation, from religious intolerance, and that's what the Mises Institute is all about, is to provide the science behind all of that. And so,
you bring up one of the most edifying reasons that is so confounding, because I have listeners from around the world, and they just can't understand, as they're moving towards a free market system like we once had, why are we moving towards a government intervention system? Why? They said you guys were gangbusters. America was gangbusters. Just, you're making money. Your people are well-educated. There is great strength of your military and your services. You're a world power. Why are we turning away in this country from the thing that got us to being such a powerful entity in the first place?
Well, Ken, I don't know that Austrian economics has an answer for that. what we know is, no, I mean, I really don't. We've lost our way. Our ideology has changed. You know, from our founding fathers, we no longer have that respect for the rule of law, the rights of property, the things that made us great, the things that made people want to come here. And I just really can't give you a good reason why the corporations have been able to take over the government to the extent that they've been. I've been in this since I was a teenager, basically.
Yeah.
During the 1970s, We had, you know, the Vietnam War go bad on us, and we had Watergate. We went off the gold standard. These are all things that I was able to understand at a primitive level, and I've been working ever since, basically trying to understand why we've gone down the wrong path. And I know what the right path is, I know what the wrong path is, and I know that we have to change the minds of the average person out there, and I know that's what you're doing. And I respect you for that and what you're doing on this program, because that's ultimately the only thing that is going to make the difference in terms of changing the direction of this country. You know, I'm involved in the science of liberty, but ultimately it's got to be shows like yours that transmit that to the people out there where it can make sense, where it's both efficient and ethical, and that people are willing to give away their self-interest in order to achieve a more efficient, a more productive, and a more ethical society out there. And so that lays outside my realm of expertise, but basically that's why and how I work towards solving that problem.
Exactly. We've moved from a civic Republican type of, or classical conception, classical liberalism conception of what a republic should be, to one that's more liberal and individualistic or egalitarian, one that's built on the self-interest being satisfied by the government, and I have no purposes outside of what the government esteems. And when we mention those particular, that transition, and it's been a brief transition when we look at relativity of time, maybe some 100 years since the introduction of the Second Bill of Rights. We look at a stock market which begins to act in accordance with crony capitalism. I'm as against individual welfare as I am against corporation welfare. But recently, the Federal Reserve Chairman Bernanke made an announcement that they were going to cut back on buying bonds. And literally, overnight, the Japanese Nikkei fell 7.5%. And the stock market, in one afternoon, while he was making his remarks, fell 200 points. And so I have to ask you, is government intervention beginning to make pseudo events on our investment strategies or in Wall Street?
Well, I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the stock market has been totally rigged by Bernanke and the Federal Reserve. I mean, if you drive down interest rates to zero, and you make the cost of capital zero, then the value of capital rises. And you know, when retirees and savers and investors look around for their money, you know, what are we going to invest in? Well, the Federal Reserve has essentially wiped out checking accounts, savings accounts, money market mutual accounts. They've wiped out bonds. They've driven bonds to all-time high prices. They've driven stocks to all-time high prices. People are taking on more risk in order to get some return. And it's basically a totally rigged stock market, and it's something that I'm not willing to invest in at this point in time, because, I mean, you know, the fair market value in terms of the real market value, if corporations had to fend for themselves and had to pay a real cost of capital, you know, in terms of the money that they borrow, and that the value of capitalization of these stocks was based on real formulas, the value of stocks would be much, much lower. And so what the Federal Reserve has tried to do is pump up the value of bonds and stocks and force people to invest in alternative investments and to give the impression that people are wealthier and therefore they should spend more money. And it really has not worked. It has not worked, right? I mean, you know.
See, when I say that, I'm just one of those commentators who's trying to stir the pot and doesn't understand real economic values, and I'm just hoaxing things out. I have like this little tin hat on that I made outside, and I'm sitting in my mama's basement doing this show. That's really important to know, is that they are driving the economy at a level that we become eventually dependent on crony capitalism and government intervention.
Well, you know, they're not driving the economy. They're trying to fool the economy with this stock market rally, which has been very impressive. I mean, I've been very impressed with what Ben Bernanke has been able to accomplish in terms of, you know, his position, but it hasn't really worked in terms of the 90% of people who are, you know, looking for jobs and are trying to save for the future and, you know, raise families and to start households. I mean, interest rates, for example, on household mortgages are extremely low. But the problem is that nobody can qualify for those loans. And so it's kind of like, you know, people are hearing, oh, yeah, you can get a 30-year mortgage for 3.75% interest. But all the people who are listening to that can't actually qualify for those loans. So it's a fake economy. It's a pretend economy. It's an artificial economy. And, you know, that history tells us in Austrian economics, you know, and your listeners can go to mises.org and learn all about the Austrian school. It's all for free, no registration and so forth. You know, history has shown that these experiments in monetary manipulation always turn out badly, and that, you know, Mises was quoted in the Wall Street Journal today. And the guy said, quoted Mises to the effect that all these experiments with trying to print your way to prosperity always end badly, and they never produce the results that they were intended to achieve. And, you know, I know your listeners would realize the idea that you can just print up money and that somehow that's going to achieve prosperity. Well, Mises pointed out in another quote, I'm the author of the quotable Mises, and he quoted out many times in his writings that if you could just print up money and create prosperity, then there never would have been a third world. There never would have been a developing world. Everybody would have been just developing like crazy. And we've seen recently in Zimbabwe that they went through a hyperinflation, and it not only brought down their economy and destroyed their export industries, but it really had a negative influence on their entire society, on education, healthcare, social cooperation, and so forth. And that society only reemerged in the black market when they started trading not in Zimbabwe dollars, but in the South African currency, the British pound, the euro, and the U.S. dollar, that they actually get their feet underneath them and started to, you know, stabilize a little bit during that hyperinflation.
Yes, there's a question from our chat room. Holger Awakens asks, how is it that we're printing money hand over fist, but inflation is going sky high?
Well, he's probably asking why isn't it going sky high
in the sense exactly.
Yeah, that the consumer price index is not going sky high. Well, that's mainstream economic analysis where they say if you increase the money supply, you'll increase prices as reflected in the consumer price index. Austrians don't view it that way. We view it that if you increase the money supply, prices will rise, but you don't know where they're going to rise. It depends on who gets the money. And in this case, of course, who gets the money is the big New York City banks, the hedge funds, and so forth. And so what we've seen is that speculators have driven up prices in stocks. They've driven up prices of bonds. They've driven up the price of real estate in Manhattan in Washington, D.C. They've driven up the prices to all-time highs, really. Gold last year reached an all-time high. And so it's a matter of where you're measuring the prices. And government economists and Wall Street economists, they look at CPI minus gasoline and food prices. Austrians look at prices as a more of a general thing. And we see prices, well, for example, farmland prices in the United States are an all-time high. Okay?
Yeah.
So, I mean, prices are rising, and it's not necessarily reflected in people's pocketbooks at this point in time. Eventually it will, unless they reverse course. And so prices are rising.
We've seen deflations in people's income, as a matter of fact, as well over the past 4 or 5 years. And thus, you know, people might not necessarily see that there is a correlation between the two. But eventually we get to a point where financially we can no longer afford the pseudo economy that's being created by those who are trying to control it or manipulate it, per se.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when most of us, your audience, you and me, we're going to the store and we're thinking, you know, should we buy the brand name or the generic name? And, you know, nominal incomes in the United States of the working class, the wage rates is the real wage rates in the United States have fallen. And so we're actually regressing in terms of wage rates, you know, not profits and not stock gains, but in terms of wage rates. And so people are going to the stores and they're cutting back on how much they buy and the quality that they buy. And manufacturers are also doing the same thing. They're, you know, making their packages smaller and they're changing the recipes of their product. And, you know, they're all trying to keep prices low. And so in the private free market economy, you know, the engine is designed to create lower prices, whether it's computers or flat screen TVs or coffee or breakfast cereals or, you know, whatever it is. We're trying to drive down those prices. And so there's a natural control. There's a natural ceiling on what the consumer price index is going to read because it's such a competitive environment where consumers are trying to stretch their dollar and where manufacturers and retailers are trying to make it as plausible as possible for the consumers to buy their products. And so, you know, that market is incredibly tight. And it always is, and it always will be.
So we're creating a artificial bubble in our economy. And, you know, if when you discuss it, I'm beginning to get the thoughts about 1928, 1929. You know, the Obama administration has stated that they faced the worst economy since the Great Depression, but I don't think that was the case. It was probably about 1982, 83 that we had the same economy that they both walked, that he walked into. However, the actions taken by this government could spur a Great Depression if it continues. Am I correct on that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when government intervenes to try to curtail or suppress a recession is when you get a Great Depression. And, you know, Herbert Hoover tried, his damnedest to try to prevent the Great Depression. And FDR, you know, did twice as much to try to get us out of the economy, get us out of the recession and the Great Depression. And, you know, the Japanese did the same thing starting in 1990. You know, they went all out. They went, you know, all in, essentially, with government deficits, government spending, low interest rates at the Fed, and so on. And those are exactly the type of things that prevent the economy from adjusting. Most of the time, you get an economic recession in the United States, Japan, Europe, wherever it is, And the government is so slow and inept at responding to it that usually the economy can recover before the government responds to it. You know? And it's just that, you know, Bush and Obama and, you know, Wall Street had us all ginned up to respond to these programs to bail out these financial firms. And, you know, that's the recipe for disaster. And I should point out, to be very honest, that mainstream economists, there's actually a few mainstream economists who have recognized that what Herbert Hoover did and what FDR did trying to bail out the economy of the early 1930s was responsible for creating, instead of just a quick recession depression, they were responsible for creating the Great Depression. And the same thing with Japan, the same thing with what we're doing right now, is that when government tries to prevent the market from correcting for all the excesses and all the mismanagement and all the misallocation of resources is when you get into a Great Depression scenario. And that's where we are at right now.
Wow, we got kids with humongous student loan debt. We have a economy that's not creating jobs, and we have a government that's intervening at a rate that's three or four times that of the Great Depression, and we have a huge bubble ahead, but the rest of America doesn't know it. How can people get in contact with you and your work so that they can prepare themselves for the next great bubble?
Well, I work at the Ludwig von Mises Institute, and our webpage is Mises.org. It's Mises.org. You can also write me, Mark, with a K, at Mises, Mises.org. And we have one of the world's largest economic webpages in the world. It's all free, 24/7, 365, no registration. We have a great bookstore with subsidized prices for books, audio, video, lectures. We have programs and conferences. We publish books, journals, and newsletters. And most of that's all free or subsidized. And I think it's a breath of fresh air. I think it's a way of looking at the world and how things are panning out. And I encourage everyone to, you know, to go there, to subscribe to our free daily news articles. We write about everything, you know, the gold standard, Bernanke. I recently did a review of the movie The Great Gatsby that's been taking off on the internet. And so there's a lot of highlighted information that I think, you know, as you know, I think your listeners would much appreciate.
I wholeheartedly endorse you. I love the work that you all do, and it has been most beneficial in practice to me and in preparation for things to come. You all need to get in there, Mises.org, Mises.org, Mises.org. But more importantly, I want to thank Mr. Thornton for taking advantage of this holiday weekend to be with us on the Exceptional Conservative Show. Thank you so much, sir. And I look forward to you coming back and keeping us abreast of the things that are going on with the economy.
Thank you, and I'd be happy to come back.
Thank you, sir.